south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, I can't believe it. Show number 800 today. 800. Yep, the Expat Files Living in Latin America, the longest running continuous expat podcast and radio show in existence. At least that's what they tell me. That's about 8+ years of my contributions to the decline of American civilization. Something to be proud of, you know? I mean, come on. When you die, what are they going to put on your tombstone? Was a nice guy, didn't cause too much trouble, paid his taxes? That's not the way I'm going to go out. If you're curious and have a half a brain, you have to explore the world. At least get the hell off your keister and throw that remote control away. Keister. I like that word. Where'd it come from, anyway? Reminds me of a kid in Catholic school. His name was Stanley Keister. Man, did he take some crap for his name. Yep, the good old Keister family. Didn't want to mess with his dad. Talk about bullying. Wonder where he is now. That should be a lesson to parents. Never name your kid something weird. Of course, he was stuck with that last name. But those first names, parents, you're in control of those. That will determine quite a bit how you're accepted by others as you grow up and live in the world. Even job interviews are influenced by a person's name. Saw some statistics on that, on how some bosses and job interviewers bond immediately to people with certain names and are repulsed by others. Not necessarily a conscious thing, but it's there subliminally anyway. So why do parents shove their kids into the world with an instant handicap? I don't get it. I just don't get the Lamishas, Fetishas, Makishas, or how about the Barneys or the Clems, or the Atwood, or people who just have a pretentious initial for their first name. I know you want your kid to be an individual. Well, you just give him a funky name and he'll be individual enough to get the crap beat out of him once in a while. So what's this got to do with anything? Well, I hailed a cab yesterday and I got picked up by none other than Benjamin Franklin himself. Yep, you know where they've got the name of the cab driver and a little sticker above the visor? There he was in all his glory, very dark Benjamin Franklin. Actually, it was Benjamin Franklin Martinez. And I said, you know, that's a name you won't forget, but you don't look much like your picture. And he said, yeah, lots of dead presidents in his family. In fact, he said his brother's name is Johnny Adams Martinez. Yeah, right. John Adams. Now, there's a family, Latin family, by the way, that knows American history better than, I guess, 90% of people up north. And I said, you know, and we're speaking in Spanish, of course, how's life been with a name like that? He said, for a long time, I didn't like it. And he said, all through school, he went by Benny. But when I became a cab driver, he said, about 6 or 7 years ago, I found out it was very good luck. Muy buen suerte. And I said, ¿cómo? How's that? Because every once in a while I'll pick up a gringo, he'll stare at my ID and give me $100 tip. He said it happens almost every month, especially around Christmas, which is coming up soon. I see the decorations are coming out already, as are the Halloween ones up everywhere. By the way, you just might catch Mr. Benjamin Franklin live and in person next time you fly into Panama. He's got his car parked right outside in the Avianca terminal pickup spot. Oh, and when he mentioned those $100 tips, I asked him who were the best tippers. He said, by far, the gringos. And the worst tippers? Take a guess. Chinese and the Muslims. They never tip, he says. Next on the list, he says, and equally stingy are the Brits, French, Germans, figures, and backpackers. Oh, and you know, when we parted that day, probably never to see each other again, I said, you really did have good luck. Your mom could have named you George Washington. Nope, no answer. He said nothing, so he didn't get it. All right, speaking of curious explorer types with more than a half a brain, how about this email? Comes from longtime listener and part-time new expat, Robbie. He starts out by saying, hola, Don J. I was curious if you might share more on your own Spanish learning experience at about the 5-year mark. I recall that's when you said you finally had a Spanish learning breakthrough. Now, me and my other half are also about 5 years into living down here in Latin America, and it seems about where you were at the five-year mark. I'd say just marginal Spanish, pretty crude really, but I can sense a breakthrough is right around the corner. He says, Johnny, I recall you saying that you knuckled down and went for a deep immersion period in rural Colombia, and that's what really put you over the top of functionality down here. Then he says, at this point, Johnny, me and my lady can go either way about being fluent in Spanish. We could just move to some culturally hybridized place like a U.S. border town, sort of on the tourist trail, or go to a rabidly tourist site and fraternize with other gringos only in English. I know, it's the coward's way out, but so many people do that, you know. But, Johnny, that's not why we came down here. And we know if we stick too close to the tourist trail, we won't have much of that gringo advantage you speak so highly of. Now, my wife and I could quit just hanging tight with each other and really get out and interact with the locals, and finally getting over that hump of being stuck in the Spanish present tense only quicksand. In fact, he said, I suspect we'd look at our life down here in a whole new light if we were fully fluent and began to find that fringe element of local Latins you mentioned who will begin to fill out our social sphere and social life here. Otherwise, you're stuck being so gringo-centric. And we'd function a lot better in many other ways as well. Seems like I recall you saying when you finally broke through that linguistic brick wall, it was a major life changer for you. Anyway, best wishes. Expat Bob in Oaxaca. Got it right that time, huh, Bob? Then he says, and this is the best part, I think, Johnny, you are also quite correct about the eventual conclusion that nothing, and I mean nothing, and he capitalizes that, beats altiplano living for the absolute best climate on the planet. He said, in fact, I recently spent a week down on the hot ass coast, seeing if I could eventually get used to the heat, but finally said, screw this, and came back up to our altiplano home with a pile of rancid, sweat-drenched clothes for my wife to wash. I'm sure she appreciated that. He says, you know, Johnny, there's nothing like our usual early morning coffee in a light sweater on the cool front porch. Can't beat it. Ain't that nice? Then he sent me a cool picture of him and his wife sitting out on the porch, three sheets to the wind, each chugging down a bottle of tequila. No, just kidding. But really, each with a big feces-eating grin. Man, ain't that the life. So thanks for the reaffirmation, Bob. But on top of that, Bob said something really interesting there. He's talking about speaking present tense Spanish. You know, that's when the breakthrough comes. After, I don't know, a year, 2 years, for me it was five, when I started to be able to speak in the future and the past tense. That is the supreme aha moment when you have arrived in the world of Spanish speakers. At least you've moved to the next gringo-style Spanish level because, you know, we can never get rid of our gringo accents. But, you know, speaking Spanish in the present tense all the time is a hallmark of a gringo Spanish speaker on his or her training wheels, and most of them never really get past that stage. Think of a 4 or 5-year-old kid. They're always speaking in the present tense. And the adults can certainly understand everything the kid's trying to get across. Same thing with gringos whose Spanish is stuck in present tense. The Latin speakers around you can understand what the hell you're saying, but it's not very functional for deep, extended, and profound conversation. Wait a minute, scratch that. What did I just say? Oh yeah, like we all sit around at parties and discuss Greek philosophy. All right, let's take a different tack here. I mean, look, it doesn't matter if your toilet's plugged in the past, future, or present tense. Your maintenance guy's going to know what you're talking about. However, wouldn't it be nice to get to the next linguistic level? But I digress as usual. By the way, you listeners out there, how's your plan B coming? Have you actually physically started acting on it, or are you still spinning it around in your head, thinking someday you'll get to it, but not right now? Well, why do you think I've been putting on my expat insider seminars for something like 8 years now? Well, it's to get all you listeners who are sitting on the fence, who just can't seem to make the leap, to give you a shove and get you off to a running start. In fact, more than a running start. Some people need a little shove and some hand-holding. Like Bob said in that last email, he heard me mention that it took 5 years for me to start understanding and speaking Spanish so that I could actually converse with the natives and understand what they were saying behind my back. And you know what? Most of it was good. And in that 5 years, I made some bad decisions, lost 5 and 10 grand here and there through bad and stupid investments and bad and stupid advice from gringos almost exclusively in the early days, some who knew a lot about scamming and some who knew a lot about every gringo bar and hangout in Latin America. Oh, I got a lot of advice, all right, but not a lot of good, sound advice. But you know, hundreds of people will tell you that real good sound advice is exactly what I have to offer at my Expat Insider Seminar. Basically, you'll come out of it with a 5-year running head start on the average clueless gringo coming down trying to do things for himself, which is exactly how I started off 28 years ago now. And remember, when I came down, there was no internet. There were no smartphones. They just had the dumbest of phones. And the calls, which dropped out all the time, cost something like 50 cents to a dollar a minute. So let me tell you, it's been a real electronic revolution since I came down here so long ago. Of course, it makes things much easier for newly arrived gringos, but it also makes things a little more confusing. You've got too many choices now. And there are many more ways to get ripped off and scammed. And I admit, and I hate to say this, the biggest scammers are gringos themselves. Once they've been down here a while, and they see you coming because you don't speak Spanish. That said, I never met a con man I didn't like. Hey, that's their stock in trade. Getting to be friends with you first. Like Expat Eddie says, when you're down in Latin America, beware of overly friendly gringo strangers who are way too quick to buy you a drink. Because strangers don't buy people drinks for nothing. Of course, the right thing to do is to get the hell out of Dodge and come here to Latin America and live the life of Riley on something like a Social Security check. But you don't want to come down here, get ripped off, nor do you want to spin your wheels for a couple of years trying to get all those things done that are necessary to start a new life, because that's just what you're going to do. Which is exactly why my Expat Insider Seminars are so valuable and unique. Tell me, why do you think some people have been back repeating my seminar 2, even 3 times? Doesn't that say it all? So my advice to all you guys and gals up there on the fence in Big Brother Land, you really should plan to come down to my January 2019 Expat Insider Seminar. This time it'll be held in 2 Latin American countries, in and around Guatemala and El Salvador. We're adding an extra day, too, to give you even more of the high-pressure fire hose treatment. Now, the basic seminar itself will be Saturday, January 4th through Thursday, January 10th. But you'll have to arrive at our Guatemalan hotel at least by Friday, because on Saturday morning we'll be shoving off at 8 sharp. You can read all about it by going to the newexpat.com website and clicking on the seminar link. Now, you longtime listeners know a very popular thing to do for people who come down to the seminar is to start their Guatemalan temporary or permanent residency at the same time, killing 2 birds with 1 stone, so they don't have to repeat another visit to Guatemala just to stand in some lines and fill out some paperwork. So if you're coming down to the seminar, you have to plan 7 more working days after the event. Then somewhere during that time, your lawyer will call and say, come on down, you got some paperwork to sign. And of course, no one wants to sit around their hotel for 7 days. You know, hurry up and wait. What are you supposed to do during that week? Well, there's that great option of going on the John Galt post-seminar tour, which is definitely one of the best ways to fill out part of that week. You can find all about the John Galt post-trip on the newexpat.com website, too. And you know, it's highly recommended whether you're applying for Guatemalan residency or not. When speaking about residency programs, you know Guatemala's got one of the least expensive and easiest residency programs as far as the number of hoops you have to jump through. And to maintain it, you only have to be in the country 1 day a year, as opposed to many of the other residency programs in Latin America where you have to stay up to 3 months a year or an accumulative period of 6 months and 5 years. And for Guatemala, just 1 day a year. Another cool thing about Guatemalan temporary residency, which switches over to permanent in 2 years, is that unlike so many other Latin American residency programs, you don't have to prove any kind of income at all. You don't have to buy a business, land, a house, or put money in a Guatemalan bank CD. You don't need a monthly recurrent pension or Social Security income direct deposited into a bank in the country either. All you need to do is hook up with a good, honorable Guatemalan lawyer, and he'll be what they call your fiador. He'll vouch for you, open a bank account with you, and process your paperwork for you. And once again, you won't have to prove any kind of income. Of course, if you go directly to permanent residency, you'll have to prove recurring monthly income, like Social Security, whatever. But as I mentioned, if you start with temporary residency and let that run the 2 years, you go right to permanent residency without having to prove income. Confused yet? Well, just know that one of the biggest problems people have is being able to prove they've got some kind of permanent monthly income when applying for any kind of permanent residency, and in most cases, temporary residency in most other Latin countries too. Except in Guatemala. Then again, these residency programs are changing all the time, so you really have to jump on this because at any time, things could change. And isn't it funny? The application procedures never get easier. They always get harder with more hoops to jump through. And always, it seems, due to heavy pressure by Big Brother Uncle Sam. All in the effort, I'm sure you know, to keep the sheep from leaving the barn. Because, you know, they can't squeeze the last drops of blood out of you if you're living 1,000 miles away in a foreign country. And suppose, let's say, some agency up in the States wants to lock down your bank account. Hey, that happens all the time. Might even have happened to you. The key phrase there is banking up in the States. Yep. But your bank accounts in Latin America are virtually unblockable and untouchable as long as they don't have a branch up in the first world. Now, what's not to like about that? Because, you know, just a lawsuit, a divorce, an IRS judgment, delinquent debts, any one of those things and more are grounds to have your bank accounts frozen. But not if you have your dough in a bank offshore. But you knew that already, right? And those are just some of the topics we talk about in great detail at the Expat Insider Seminar. So just visit thenewexpat.com, all one word. Check out the info and sign up and come on down. But back to a few points expat Bob hit in his email. He said he and his wife have been expats out of the country for around 5 years now. And they feel that the Spanish language barrier for them is about to get broken. And that sort of comes, you know, when you start thinking a bit in Spanish without forcing it. In fact, just the other day I was talking to Bitcoin Dan. And he said, Johnny, you know, I've been down here 5 or 6 years now and I speak some Spanish, but I can't really have a decent conversation the way I want to have it with a Spanish-speaking person because I just don't have the vocabulary and I can't put it all together. Though I can get my point across, it's really difficult and frustrating when you just can't find the words you're looking for. And he's way off the Gringo tourist trail, too, but he admits the problem is his wife is a crutch for him. She can speak Spanish pretty much fluently, so when you're with someone like that and you start stumbling, the other just picks up and takes over, and you say, wow, what a relief. You make the reservations, order the pizza, get on the phone with the electric company, whatever. And the problem is compounded living around or near gringos. Because when on or near the tourist trail, there's always a gringo or two who can speak Spanish. And everyone else will defer to them, and that's not good. So really, the only ways to get good with your conversational Spanish is to go off the gringo tourist trail, or do a couple of weeks, even a month or two of intensive immersion, or better yet, or perhaps best of all, hook up with a non-English-speaking boyfriend, girlfriend, or better half. Then you're absolutely forced into stumbling along with your bad Spanish till finally it starts clicking. And it does, even for language dunces like me. I consider myself a language dunce. Even though there's a lot of things I'm good at, I ain't good at languages. Sorry. I ain't much for singing, playing the bagpipes, or baking cakes either. Hey, gotta know your limitations, right? And another thing that rarely comes up is the fact that when you know your Spanish, you don't get hosed for being a gringo. Because, you know, especially on or near the Gringo Tourist Trail, they nail you with gringo prices, which sometimes seem pretty good because they're almost always less than you pay up in the States for the same thing, but you are getting hosed. Good example here. About a week ago, I was in one of those big, fantastic markets buying up some fruits and vegetables, and I certainly was the only gringo there amongst the hordes, and I walked up to a lady selling avocados and melons, you know, known as muskmelons in Chicago. I walked up and squeezed the charmin, so to speak. Didn't say a word, and she said, buck and a half as translated into the local funny money. And I said, ¿Qué? $1.50? Es precio de gringo. And her eyes widened and she shot back, 50 cents. Again, in the local funny money, because she realized I spoke Spanish and she wasn't going to get away with nailing me for gringo prices. Now, I bet you if I would have walked up to her and said, how much is that in Spanish, she would have said 50 cents. But since I walked up there and said nothing, she assumed gringo, let's hit him for gringo prices. Though I'm sure some gringos would think a buck and a half is a deal. Down here, it ain't. So the long and short of it, if you know your Spanish at least well enough to communicate with the locals, you're going to save a lot of money along the way, just because you won't be constantly bombarded with gringo prices. And that's another big mistake gringos often make. They hear a price that sounds a lot cheaper than what they pay up in the States, so they accept it. They pay it. Whereas Latins are waiting for you to come back. They want to haggle. It's part of the culture. Except, of course, when you go to a first world place or franchise like Subway, Taco Bell, Walmart, Costco, Starbucks, even Sears. Wait a minute, Sears? Yep, that's right. Sears went bankrupt up in the States, but down here, they're expanding. And you longtime listeners know why, right? Because it's not space that's the final frontier. It's Latin America that's the final frontier. Because you see, in short, American companies have discovered that Latin American labor costs are about a quarter to a fifth or even a tenth sometimes of what they have to pay for labor up in the States. So they bring their franchises down, they automatically clean up. Since in many cases of retail shops up in the States, that is, a good 30 to 40% of your overhead is in labor costs. Now, what happens if that was knocked down to 10 or even 5% of your overhead? The rest goes in your pocket, man, or buys you a lot of time to get your marketing going and getting the word out so that people start shuffling through your door. Because number one reason brick-and-mortar businesses fail, whether it's in the States, Europe, or Latin America, is time's up. New business owners don't realize they need 6 months to a year's operating capital in a bank somewhere, or maybe under the mattress, to tide them over until people recognize they've got a business and they start shuffling through the door and buying stuff. That's the way it is for mom-and-pop businesses anyway, unless you happen to open an extremely well-known business franchise, for example, McDonald's, Taco Bell, Burger King, Pizza Hut, etc., where the branding and the marketing's all been done for you already, which is why people buy franchises in the first place. But in the case of a mom-and-pop style restaurant, B&B, surf shop, even hardware store, it might take 6 months or more to get the word out before enough people walk through your door to make your nut, as they say. And if you don't have 6 months to a year of operating expenses tucked away, you've heard the numbers, 9 out of 10 small businesses in the States close up within the first 2 years, which, to tell you the truth, really makes you wonder why people even want to dive into a project like that. I know, because everyone wants to be their own boss. They think their idea is great and they're eternal optimists and all that. But the truth is you get a lot better odds playing blackjack in Vegas. And even today, the franchises that used to be sure things like McDonald's are starting to close. Have you noticed that? You got a shrinking, even withering middle class. People maxed out on credit cards. 10 fast food joints in every neighborhood. Then you've got to deal with those horrendous government regulations, too. Except if you're down in Latin America, not only have you got that huge labor cost advantage, your rent is going to be at least 50% cheaper or less than an equivalent location up in the States. Not to mention people don't carry insurance because no one gets sued. And the taxes here in Latin America, well, it'd be a stretch to say that for your business, you'd pay 10% tax. Sure, if you're on the books down here, you pay taxes. But your lawyer will advise you 101 ways on how to knock down those taxes to 5 or 10% at most. Besides that, tax evasion is one of the three national sports in Latin America. And the other two, can you guess? Well, one would be soccer, or what they call football. And the other, cheating on your wife or girlfriend. And if you think that's BS, learn some Spanish and ask around. And finally, expat Bob reaffirms the fact that the Altiplano is the absolute best place to live if you want to be comfortable. Though it's not a great place to have a swimming pool. I know people in the Altiplano with pools and they don't use them much. Sure, if you got a beach house or you're living near the coast, you definitely need a pool because, like Bob said, Unless you're in the AC, you're sweating all the time. So I can tell you 100 reasons why the Altiplano is the perfect place to live. In fact, when I do the boots on the ground portion of my expat insider seminars, I often take them to a friend of mine's maquila. He owns three of them, often known as sweatshops. But like he says, there ain't nobody sweating here, Johnny, because we're in the Altiplano. Oh, he's had other maquilas, all right. A couple in Honduras, in Panama, and Jamaica, too. And soon enough, he figured out his electric costs went way down because he does not have to air condition his factories in the Altiplano, specifically Guatemala. And he admits his people in the Guatemalan Altiplano are 30% more productive than maquilas on the coast. They seem more happy, they work harder and longer because they're more comfortable. And the other thing people aren't thinking about is this global warming phenomena. Whether you believe it's caused by humans or not, it's happening. Though who knows, we could have a little ice age at any time too. Those things do happen, and there was one during the Middle Ages. Check it out. Though it looks for now anyway, things are warming up. Lately I've been traveling to various Latin countries, and I've been asking people, taxi drivers, business owners, farmers, etc., to tell me the truth how the climate's changed in the last 10 or 20 years. Is it the same? Is it hotter, colder, more wet? And every single one of them, unless it's brainwashed groupthink, are telling me the storms are more powerful, the warm seasons are warmer. Even if you just slightly believe in global warming, do you really want to have a house on the beach or at sea level? Do you want to take that chance? Meanwhile, everyone who's at or near the beach is sweating their asses off right now. So maybe you don't believe in global warming. Well, it's still miserable when you live there. Unless, of course, you have air conditioning, then you're going to pay through the nose for electricity. Worse yet, if the global warming phenomena really is true, wouldn't it be in your best interest as an expat with a plan B to live in the Altiplano? Then who gives a rip whether you believe in global warming or not? Though I'm still convinced more than half the people who are screaming global warming, never looked at any statistics, and it's just kind of mass hysteria. Again, not to say it doesn't exist, I think it's happening. It's just that most people who are religious about it never picked up a science book in their lives. But really, if your get-out-of-dodge plan B idea is to live on the beach or at the coast, whatever, are you willing to bet the farm that there is no global warming? Because if it's really true, and it's half as severe as some people say it is and how it's going to affect us in a couple of years, if you live on the coast or near sea level, you're screwed. Then again, I don't want to see a mad rush of gringos flocking in. Oh, there goes the neighborhood.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.